Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Indeed, today is the day. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. Today is the day that the Lord has made. And I recognize that sometimes when we hear that news at the top of the hour, if you're like me, you know, sometimes your heart sinks, your brow furrows. You wonder what is going on in the world. Let me just simply remind us today that God is sovereign. Things are not spinning out of his control, even though sin is rampant in the world, and we see evidences of it not only in our own lives, but in the wreckage oftentimes around us in the culture and sometimes in our political conversations and discussions. My response is always to pray the news, and I would encourage you to do so as well. Please be praying with me in the spirit of Christ. You and I can actually gather together right now in prayer. Two or three of us could be gathered in prayer in this moment for each one of those headlines that was just, you know, shared with us at the top of the hour. So let's be praying today for the family of the fallen officer. Let's be praying for the other officer who shot him. Let's be praying today for his physical recovery. Let's be praying today for that police department. I mean, just on and on, right? And you and I also need to certainly be praying today for people in the U.S. government at all levels. And so I want to remind us of this today. In fact, this is a story that you may or may not have heard, because I don't know. It didn't spike in my news, and I'm paying pretty close attention to the news. So a couple of weeks ago now, there was a U.S. House committee that proposed formally striking the words "So help me God" from the oath that's required of witnesses who appear before the committee. Now that actually failed. That was the House Committee on Natural Resources. But what has happened in the aftermath is that there are now chairmen of other committees and subcommittees who are just striking it on their own, and basically saying, you know, that's the oath that we use here in our committee doesn't include that, which is curious because it actually includes it in the House rules. So we have some members of Congress calling out chairmen of these committees. So just on Wednesday, February the 6th, this happened in the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Oversight, where the representative responsible for swearing people in left out "So help me God" from the oath. And then when she was called on that, she said, well, this is the oath that we use. That's the oath we're going to use today. And the committee moved on. You and I could have lots of conversations about whether or not swearing an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, "So help us God," in this particular context, has any actual bearing on the behavior of an individual. But you and I could have a larger conversation about swearing oaths at all and whether or not we ought to be swearing them at all as Christians. So I offer this to you because not only do we need to be praying for people in positions of leadership and public service, we need to really be considering, as Christians in the culture today, what are the forms of religion and the formal ways in which we acknowledge God in the culture that may informally actually bear out a witness against us in terms of, you know, our functional atheism. I mean, we have money printed that it is in God that we trust, and then we have a $22 trillion debt. I would say that there are all kinds of conversations that you and I can have today as Christians in the culture that reach far beyond the headline news to the very heart of the matters before us. Oh, okay, friends, up next, I'm going to be talking with Bill English from Bibles and Business, and he and I are going to be talking about the lessons that we can learn from football. We're also going to talk about the lessons we can learn from the Bible. All right, friends, let's bring the Bible to bear on life today. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge, joined for our weekly conversation with Bill English. Bill has so many letters after his name that we could just have like an alphabet soup conversation one day. He's got an MA, an MDiv, an LP, a CPB, PM, which of course only means something to those of you who took that class. He's also a qualified neutral pastor. What does that mean? All right, let's start there. Bill English, what does it mean to be qualified neutral?
That's Minnesota's jargon for a mediator.
Nice.
That's what Minnesota calls a mediator. They call them neutrals. So
I love that you're a qualified neutral. I don't know. That's a curiosity. So friends can find Bill at BibleAndBusiness.com. So can we start by talking about the fact that for the first time ever, the United States of America now has $22 trillion in debt? Let's just talk about debt in general. And from your perspective, you know, debt is a good or a bad thing?
This kind of debt's a bad thing because we're stealing, we're stealing the wealth of future generations and we're spending it on our party. And there's no excuse for this. If we want to have all these social programs, we want to have Medicare, Medicaid, all this stuff, then this generation ought to pay for its use of that program. And past generations should have paid for their use of those programs. Now, but what we're doing is that we're taking our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids' wealth. We're taking their wealth, spending it on ourselves. I fully expect at some point in the future that the younger generations will rise up and call us greedy and selfish and other things like that, and they will be justified in doing so.
So, Bill, explain to us why we can't just print more money to solve that problem, because I hear young people say, like, that's not a problem. We just, you know, it's like my credit card. I just get a bigger, you know, I just get my spending limit increased, and I just keep paying. You know, whatever that minimum payment is. Tell us why both of those are bad ideas. Why we can't just keep printing money and why continuing to simply increase our spending limit and paying the minimum are bad ideas.
Well, bad ideas. Well, this is what Cortez said, right, about her green program. We would just have the Treasury finance it if we didn't have enough money. Look, the printing of money, the more dollars you have chasing the same amount of goods, the more you're going to have inflation, especially if you can get velocity on those dollars. So you're going to, as you print more and more money, each dollar becomes worth less and less. And so a loaf of bread today might cost, I'm just going to guess, you know, $4. I don't know what they cost. I never shop, right?
You and tomorrow, and whoever it was that was criticized for not knowing what a box of Cheerios cost. There you go. You're right there with Jeff Bezos, I think. Yeah. It's okay.
Am I? Yeah, I
don't know either.
Don't know.
So it's okay. I mean, I'm the grocery shopper and I didn't know the answer to that question either. So there you go. We're back to a loaf of bread.
Okay. But the problem is, as each dollar becomes worth less and less, the dollars in your savings accounts also becomes worth less and less. The buying power of what you have saved becomes less and less. And as a result, you have to save more and more to have less and less value. And so the last thing you want to be doing here is pumping a bunch of money into the economy. Look, we've already done that. In 2007, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet only had about $800 million on it. And today it has over $5 trillion on it. That's how much during the Obama years and part of the Trump years now, we just pumped money into the economy to create liquidity so that our economy just wouldn't fall flat on its face. And look, Donald Trump is as big, if not bigger, of a spender than Obama was. And I really get frustrated with the conservative groups who were complaining about the debt under Obama, and you haven't heard boo from them under Trump. This is not right. This debt is going to implode. And when our economy implodes, it's going to make 2008-09 look like a walk in the park. It really will. It's going to be very, very difficult.
So if you're interested in this topic, and I think everybody should be, you should go to BibleAndBusiness.com and over on the left, click on, there's a big word that says debt. And if you click on that, it's going to take you to an article that Bill posted back in November of 2018. So I recognize that, you know, this is now February of 2019, but that's not really that long ago. So all you have to do is sort of move these numbers forward slightly. But he actually goes into explaining all of this and gives us the details related to debt. And I really feel like this article equips us for conversations that we need to be having today as Christians in the culture. So, Bill, let's pause for just a moment, and then let's come back and talk about the business leadership lessons that we can all learn from football, having just passed the Super Bowl. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LeBurge, and I'll be right back with Bill English. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge, continuing my discussion with Bill English. You can check it out at BibleandBusiness.com. Hey, Bill, let's talk about the leadership lessons that we can all learn from football. Fill us in.
Yeah, Vince Lombardi once said, the achievements of an organization are the result of the combined efforts of each individual. That's true not only on a football team or a basketball team, it's also true in business. When you have the combined efforts and you have everybody working across what I call the core value process, the process that a company uses to create value for its customers, the customers are willing to pay for, when people are working in that and they're working well in it, the organization is going to succeed. To the extent that the process is fat, it's kludgy, it's not well understood, It has a lot of steps that don't add value, then the organization is going to be injured, get hampered, and maybe even fail. So that was one quote that I read in this article. The article, by the way, for those who want to know, is from a company called Intermedia News, and it was published just on January 25th, three business leadership lessons we can all learn from football. So I thought this would be an interesting article to reference today.
Absolutely. And Michael Gold is the author. And number two is, it's not the will to win, but the will to prepare to win that makes the difference. Now, that's a quote from Bear Bryant. Tell us what that's talking about.
Well, the preparation always precedes winning, always precedes success. Success rarely comes to an individual who just has the natural abilities to do something well or to succeed at something. You almost always have to prepare. Most of us, at least if you're like me, you have to prepare really hard and long before you experience success. And so preparation is really the key to success in business. Now, I say, what does preparation look like in business? Well, first of all, it's obviously training staff on software processes. I'll call it the soft skills of conflict resolution, that kind of thing. But it's also your monthly coaching or your biweekly coaching feedbacks for the people who are your direct reports. We do not at the company that I'm the CEO of this turnaround that I've been doing now for, I don't know, 13 months. We don't do annual performance reviews. We do biweekly coaching sessions. And that way people get immediate feedback on their performance, and we can make and tweak adjustments on what they need, resources they need, maybe places that they're placing their focus, that kind of thing. We can make those adjustments right away, and we're seeing some real success with that. I also think part of preparation is staying up on the industry news, the changes, the innovations that are going on in your industry, maybe regulatory compliance changes. You got to stay up on all that stuff in order to be really well prepared. By the way, going back to the debt for just a moment, when our economy does implode at some point in the future, which I really believe that it will because of our debt, the church is going to have a unique opportunity for ministry. But the church will only be as effective as it can be in that situation if the church is not weighed down by the same debt that our culture is weighed down by. So I think part of the church's preparation for the future is to teach its lay people how to stay out of debt as much as possible, and then also how to be giving hospitable people towards those who are going to need it, even if the hospitality is given to people who created the problems for themselves. And so those are some thoughts on the preparation piece.
Well, yes, which leads me to say, as a writer, you and I should come up with like a church preppers thing, because, you know, that'd be popular.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? Can okay, you we're imagine totally, the, we're totally doing that. We're totally doing that. Okay, so there's a third one here. I don't believe in team. This is a Tom Landry quote. I don't believe in team motivation. I believe in getting a team prepared. Well, we just talked about preparation. So have we already covered this one and I kind of missed it?
Well, yeah. No, but it says, so the part that I was picking up on this quote was, if you finish it, I believe in getting a team prepared so it knows it will have the necessary confidence when it steps on the field, right? And it's that confidence piece I was picking up on there. A lot of organizations do not know or do not have the confidence that if they are given a certain set of problems that they'll be able to fix them. But the really highly mature, well-prepared ones, they know over time through experience that no matter what comes their way, they will figure out a way to solve that problem and move past it. That kind of confidence is born in the furnace of having to go through more difficult and more difficult circumstances and yet emerge successful at the other end.
So, Bill, if as a radio person, I could add a fourth one here, and I would love to be able to communicate this, like, right, this whole concept of a 2-minute drill, you're really good at it. Like, you understand that the nature of radio is conversation or dialogue, and there should be this back and forth. And so the 2-minute drill really is, I should get my thoughts together in such a way that I can deliver them in less than 2 minutes in order that the other person in the conversation has an opportunity to engage as well. And I think that's true in leadership. Oftentimes, I feel like leaders are lecturing instead of recognizing that they ought to be able to sum it up in a couple of minutes and then really allow for genuine communication that's back and forth.
Leadership is like officiating a basketball game, if you ask me. I'm a basketball official. One of the things that they tell us in official schools is that you're not the focus of the game. You're there to make the game work well. I think good leaders should not be the focus of the organization. They empower others so that the organization is focused around the employees rather than the leadership.
So that probably blows some people's minds today. And I think that's good. Right. I mean, that's a really good challenge. That's a good challenge about humility. It's a good challenge about recognizing that each and every one of us is simply a part of the body, that we are designed to grow up individually into Christ in order that the whole body might work together properly to do the things in the world that God has created, called, and then redeemed us to do. So I love all of that. Friends, you can check out what Bill is writing about at BiblesandBusiness.com. Uh-oh. Did I put an S in there? It's BibleandBusiness.com. Don't put an S in there. I don't know where that will take you. And then the conversation piece that we've been using today is actually posted at intermedia.net, and it's written by their chief executive officer, and his name is Michael Gold, and that is 3 business leadership lessons we can all learn from football. Bill English, I look forward to talking with you again next week.
Me too. Thanks, Carmen.
Absolutely. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBurge. Good morning and welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBurge. So as Valentine's Day approaches and you are considering what to talk about as a Christian in the culture today, when the conversations are going to be dominated by, love that's not always reflective of the pure love of Jesus Christ, I'm wondering if you have some favorite stories that you turn to, love stories that you say, oh, you know what, Jane Austen, those Jane Austen novels, Pride and Prejudice, what else might come to mind, Jane Eyre, maybe for you what comes to mind when we talk about great love stories. Maybe, I don't know, like, right? I would love for you to answer that question. So you can text me, you know, your favorite love stories at 877-933-2484. You can tweet them to me. I'm at Carmen LaBurge on Twitter. You can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. I'm really excited to be learning the love story of Jim and Elizabeth Elliot directly from their daughter, Valerie Elliot Shepherd, who is going to be here with us to talk about devotedly. It's the personal letters and journals of Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. What a great love story for this Valentine's week. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
If you had to limit 5 non-negotiable battles in your home, what would they be? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Mom, Dad, it's critically important to choose your battles wisely. So let me share a trick. Sit down and think through the most important conflicts with your teen. Identify the issues where you refuse to budge. Choose only 5 and determine to compromise on the lesser ones. What are the 5 most important conflicts in your home? Will you stick to your guns on academics, modesty, video games, the choice of friends? Will you make a big deal out of sexual activity or cleaning a room? There's always conflict when a teen is in the house. So choose to rank the big stuff as non-negotiable. Pick your battles wisely.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I have a little news update that didn't make it into that news there that we just shared with you. For those of you who have been longtime listeners to Walk in the Word here on Faith Radio, you know that there was a programming change and that Walk in the Word was discontinued here on Faith Radio. It's actually been discontinued across several radio outlets. And I think maybe that story is now coming together for some of us. So today, on the Harvest Bible Chapel website, the church elders have announced that James McDonald has been fired by that suburban Chicago megachurch. He founded the church, Harvest Bible Chapel, 3 decades ago, and his departure from his position as pastor of that church follows years of controversy over, you know, frankly, leadership style and leadership style issues. And so we want to be praying today for James McDonald. We want to be praying for the folks who attend and are a part of the life and fellowship of Harvest Bible Chapel. We want to be considering leadership. We want to be thinking about not only our leadership effectiveness, but our leadership style and what that means and why it matters. We just had that conversation, at least partially, with Bill English. How does the Bible come to bear on your leadership style? And how might this lead to opportunities for conversation with leaders who you know who maybe aren't leading as Christ would lead? I mean, I will just use that as an opportunity for conversation today. It's an opportunity for us to examine our own leadership styles. It's also an opportunity for us to hold those in leadership accountable. And so I think that one of the immediate questions that people will ask is, oh, you know, all of the stuff that I learned from walking the Word over the years, you're like, right, am I supposed to set that aside? Am I supposed to figure out a way to dig that out of my heart? No. Walk in the Word was an effective way of God planting the seeds of his word in the culture writ large. And so let's take what God has given us through the ministry of James McDonald, and let's be praying for him and his family and this congregation today. Okay, welcoming now to Mornings with Carmen, a person whose life and ministry I am just coming to know more about. Her name is Valerie Elliott Shepherd. She is the only daughter of Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. Valerie, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, I can hear you great. So it's thrilling to meet you. You know, in my mind, you are 3 years old and tragically you've just lost your dad on the mission field.
Yeah.
And your mom has made this really incredible decision to return with you to that community. Tell, for people who are not familiar with your story, tell us a little bit of your story.
Okay. I was 10 months old when my dad was killed. My father and 4 other men really wanted to reach this one very primitive and savage tribe called the Alcas, That name has now changed to Wai'udani, which means the people, but the Alcas was a Quechua name. Another tribe called them that because they were savage. That was the word for savage. They had friendly contact, 15 weeks of dropping gifts to them by plane. And the Alcas were, the Wai'udani were happily receiving the gifts. And then the five men placed, put a treehouse up on this little beach that was near that village. And they planned to stay there indefinitely so that they could have more and more contact and try to learn the language. So what happened was the first contact was very friendly. Three Alcas came out of the jungle and spent the afternoon with them. And the men were thrilled, but there was very little communication and understanding because the men only knew a few Alca phrases. And the Alcas didn't understand that the men didn't know their language. So the Alcas chattered on, and the men listened in a friendly way, and there was really good happy feeling among all of them. And the pilot, Nate Saint, is the one who flew the plane into this beach. And he was going back and forth to get more supplies each day and talking with his wife on the radio. And so on Sunday morning, this was a Friday that they, excuse me, Thursday night that they met these three. This was January 1956. And on Sunday morning, Nate flew over the little village. Normally, whenever he flew over, all of the Alcas would come out from under their thatched roofs, thatched roof huts. And there were only 40 people in the tribe, and that really was only 10 men, and the rest were women and children. Well, he flew over, and nobody came out from under the hut. So he radioed to his wife, and he said, "I hope they're all coming to our beach," which they called Palm Beach. He said, "Pray for an afternoon service," which was kind of tongue-in-cheek because they wouldn't have been able to have much of a worship service, the Alcas not having any idea what they were saying. But he flew back to the beach, and they had lunch. And then in the afternoon, when he had told his wife that he would call at 4:30, unfortunately, his wife didn't hear anything. And by 7:30, she alerted the wives, the other wives, different places. She alerted them that...
I think it's possible that we have that we've momentarily lost Valerie. So Paul Perot will diligently work to get her back on the line. The story of Jim Elliott and these other missionaries in Ecuador in 1956 is very impactfully told in a movie called End of the Spear. And I just highly recommend that you consider watching End of the Spear. I don't know, it's probably nearly 20 years old now in terms of the making of the movie. The reason that I have Valerie on with us today is because she has drawn together the personal letters and therefore the love story of her parents, Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. So it really is, the book is called Devotedly. It's just out literally on the 1st of February. And it describes this, not just the heroic story of Jim Elliott as a missionary, but the remarkable story of how these two people, Jim and Elizabeth Elliott, were drawn together to pursue God's will for them as young believers. And it talks about their courtship and the blessings of their marriage and just the intertwining of their lives. So the book is Devotedly, and we've got Valerie Elliott Shepherd back on the line, and she and I will continue our conversation in just a moment. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen, continuing my conversation with Valerie Elliott Shepherd, and she is the only daughter of Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. Elizabeth Elliott, whom you know from her prolific writing as a Christian author and speaker. And Valerie, let's just move to a conversation about Devotedly. This book is precious. Tell us what it is and how it came to be.
Thank you. Well, my mother and father carried on a 5-year courtship, but when I say carried on, it was very, They were very unsure whether God would allow them to get married, and their first desire was to do what God wanted. And they met in college, at Wheaton College in Illinois. They were Greek majors. They fell in love, but my father, within a couple of months, told her that he thought God was calling him to celibacy as a missionary. They both had strongly felt called to the mission field from the time they were quite young, my mother when she was about 13 and my father when he was 18 or 19. And then they carried on this correspondence, and the first 12 weeks, my mother said, "We're not going to write, we're just going to pray." And then they started writing, and some of the writing was a little bit turbulent because my father wanted more affirmation from my mother, and she was very strict and said, "We have no claim on each other. Our minds and hearts seem to go along the same lines of desire for the Lord and desire for His glory. So we can continue writing," which went on, as I said, for 5 years. They did get married in 1953 after my father finally realized that God was giving him the green light, as my mother used to say, to ask her to marry him. They both were in Ecuador, and they went to live with the Quechua tribe. But meanwhile, they had been praying for this Elka tribe. So anyway, the book is a compilation of my mother's diaries from those years and her letters and my father's letters. And my mother had written a book called Passion and Purity, which was about their courtship, but it's much shorter. And it did not have as many letters or excerpts from any, didn't have any diary excerpts of hers, as I believe. But it, this book is that one time my father wrote devotedly at the ending, the closing of his letter. And the publishers thought that would be an excellent name for the book simply because he was devoted to my mother, but with this understanding that God may not allow them to get married. So it was an interesting courtship, to say the least. But anyway, I found my mother's letters in her attic after she died in 2015. She had given me my father's letters back probably when I had all 8 children at home. And she said, "You don't have time to read these now, but someday you will." So that was about 2012 when I decided to start reading them. And the book came about, finally got published this February, but it was a challenge for me, and I'm very thankful that I had friends that helped me, as well as the editor at Lifeway Bookstores Books Publishing. So that's the story, I guess.
It's just beautiful, and it gives us a window into a real relationship between two very mature Christians who are approaching consideration of marriage in a very different way than many people in the American culture approach marriage and the conversation about marriage and whether or not they ought to wed today. What do you think this contemporary generation can learn from your parents, what we'll describe as patience, but commitment to the Lord and their intentionality to be in His will as more important than following their own hearts?
Well, I think this young culture can learn that God is really in charge of everything that happens to us. God is a loving God, and He has a perfect, joyous will for each of us. And we do need to seek Him. And this is one thing they were very serious about, and that was reading His word, which they believed to be their authority, and seeking Him in prayer, just simply saying, "Lord, my life is yours. I want what you want for me." And they both did feel strongly God had called them to work among Indians, and they both were strong in translation because they wanted to translate from the original Greeks and New Testament into whatever language they were working with. So I think the main thing is finding out through this book and through this story that seeking God first above all else, above your feelings, is way more important than following your feelings. And mainly our culture since the 60s has been saying, do whatever you want and follow your feelings. And I believe that gets us into trouble. These feelings have to be sublimated to God's will, and again, I want to emphasize, God is a perfectly loving God, and he has a good plan for each of us. So we do need to ask him and seek what it is he wants us to do. And he doesn't show us a blueprint for the next 3 months or 5 months or 5 years. He has us walking with him one day at a time. And I think the patience that they exhibited through those 5 years was really remarkable. And it is kind of it sets an example for young people to recognize that finding out what the Lord's will is can take time, and it does take time, but in the end, it was absolute joy because they had waited for the Lord to give them the green light, so to speak.
Valerie, it's just absolutely the right book at the right time for us as a culture, for us as the body of Christ, and because it's Valentine's week. So thank you so much. Right? Thank you so much for the labor of love of gathering all of this together and delivering it to us in a book. It's called Devotedly. And friends, you can find it at Lifeway, at all of your Lifeway Christian bookstores, but we actually have some copies to share with you. So if you are interested in a copy of Devotedly, The Personal Letters and Love Story of Jim and Elizabeth Elliott by Valerie Elliott Shepherd, you can text me at 877-933-2484. You can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Valerie, I hope that you will come back and share with us this other book that's also very recently published, Suffering is Never for Nothing, actually written by your mom. Could I just impose upon you and invite you back to talk about that book as well?
I would love to. I need to read it, though, myself, because this is a compilation of all of her CDs and tapes when she spoke on suffering. So I do need to read it. Give me a couple of weeks. And yes, I'd be happy to come back and share. And thank you for giving me this opportunity, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for being with us today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you very much, Carmen. God bless you.
And you as well. The book is Devotedly, The Personal Letters and Love Story of Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. It's perfect. It's perfect to talk about the real love of God in Jesus Christ that he cultivates in our hearts for one another. It's a beautiful, beautiful story of the reality of what marriage means and why it should be pursued and how it should be righteously pursued. So again, friends, if you are interested in entering a drawing for a copy of Devotedly, you can text me at 877-933-2484 or email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Well, that's about all the time we have today here on Mornings with Carmen. I love spending this time with you each and every day. I also appreciate your comments and your feedback and your prayer concerns. You can always text those to 877-933-2484, as well as your interest in books that we discuss here on Mornings with Carmen. You can always email me all of that same stuff to Carmen@myfaithradio.com. If you are on Twitter, I would love to know it. You can follow me. I am at Carmen LaBerge, and I'll follow you back. That's kind of how that works. So we also post everything that we do here on the live broadcast. We post at myfaithradio.com on the Mornings with Carmen page. And you could sign up for the podcast and you could actually share today's show with someone else. So I would encourage you to do that as well. Okay, we are going to be praying the news today as it scrolls across all of our social media or as we hear it on the radio or read it in the papers or hear it from our friends. And then we're going to turn those concerns over to God, and we're going to bring the mind of Christ to bear on the matters and the issues of our day. That's what we're doing as ambassadors in the world that God so loves, bringing the mind of Christ to bear on each and everything. Friends, thanks for joining me this morning on Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBerge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at MyFaithRadio.com.